You're listening to a 3CR podcast recorded in the 3CR Community Radio Studio in Melbourne, Australia. If you like what you hear, please consider donating or subscribing so we can keep bringing you more independent community content. For more information, go to 3cr.org.au.
Hello and welcome to Uprise Radio with your hosts, Koshin
and Zan.
That's perfect. That's as good as it's going to get. Might just clip that and use that one in the future.
We can start speeding it up and slowing it down. It's a pleasure to be here. We are broadcasting on unceded Wurundjeri country. And this always was and always will be Aboriginal land.
We are back, as always, to bring you some news. We have an update on a previous story this week. We are going to return to the Democratic Republic of the Congo to talk about minerals and mineral extraction.
Yeah, I feel like after there was one episode where we were going to look back at all of the stories we'd ever done and do tiny updates, and now I think we have an infinite amount of content for a long while.
Yep. You could talk about the Congo forever. It really does just keep on going. And we are sitting in some very comfy new chairs. Shout out to the new chairs in the studio. If you're a 3CR presenter, you know what I'm talking about. We got some good chairs here now.
Yeah, they're actually kind of terrifying. If you lean back, they don't fall over, but they kind of feel like they should.
But you won't hear it because they don't squeak, even the tiniest bit. So we are going to talk about
chair reviews for the next 25 minutes.
I think this story was briefly mentioned during the Radiothon special that the Democratic Republic of the Congo is seeking to retrieve colonial era maps from Belgium that had geological surveys of the country and showed mineral deposits and could be used to plan out and invest in mines. Mines which usually bad, but can be good, depending on what's being mined.
Yeah, there's been a lot of very particular framing in the media about how the documents that are being held by the museum in Belgium, which is called the Africa Museum, and these documents include maps and records, field reports, photographs, even rock samples, could be very useful for future mineral investments and resource extraction, particularly around critical minerals. And I've always seen it being linked to sustainable technologies, the green transition. And I guess quite particular in that people aren't trying to talk about it in terms of just we want to mine.
Yeah.
Is that we do want to mine.
Definitely. Yeah. It's not all the same stuff, I guess. Some of it would be very helpful for the green transition that we definitely need to make to combat climate change. But there are other interests as well. There's just, you know, money to be made from some of this stuff as well. We are talking about, and sit down if you're not sitting, we are talking about 24 trillion with a T, $24 trillion dollars worth of minerals they're looking for the maps showing where they are. Belgium is taking steps to unlock them, as they say, to share them with the Congolese government.
And the process itself has been quite interesting because the records are being held in a museum in Belgium, and there has been some resistance in them being handed over in particular ways. So first there was a company in the US called Cobold Metals that had plans to help digitize the records, but the Belgian authorities insisted that digital copies were shared directly with the Congolese authorities. But this Cobold Metal Company, which is a US exploration company, also signed an agreement with the DRC to help digitize the records. So Belgium's I guess resistance is also a bit peculiar in light of the fact that there is already an agreement between the US and the DRC.
Mm. And it's a competition, really, between US interests and China. That's the big showdown. Those are the two major powers that have a really deep vested interest today in exploiting the resources in the DRC. China, for, you know, their massive industrial base. The US companies have a more global capitalist mindset. They will sell. They're not necessarily tethered to the US market, but they are US-based companies. China has a huge, huge footprint in this area of Africa. With their, they own a lot of mines. They extract a lot of resources, and these new maps, this new information, would be very beneficial to whoever can strike a deal to get their hands on this untapped potential, the untapped resources.
And as it stands, the DRC already is 75% of the supply of cobalt to the world. Yeah. So it's already a huge player.
Mm.
I guess there's also the question of like data sovereignty, and it's been also called geoscientific sovereignty, which I think is also really important. It's not just the economic benefits that could be happening from this, but also in the context of a post-colonial nation for Belgium to be holding data which the country should have sovereignty over, really feels like something that should be given back really swiftly, and also with the DRC's express interest in mind, less so than the Belgian interest. And I think I've found it interesting listening to one interview with someone who worked at the Africa Museum in Belgium, or still does, who mentioned that he was concerned that because these were public archives, they were in the public interest, and hence there's a reticence to be handed, for it to be handed over to private firms. But that left really unclear whether the public interest he's referring to is people in Belgium or people in the DRC, because they seem like different public interests.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, it is interesting that they are even... that they are unlocking the maps at all, given the context of how much kind of stolen wealth from the colonial era is still kind of very coveted, and how much of it is kept within the confines of Europe. Thinking of especially, trophies and things that are, I mean, museums especially are, you know, a great display of how much was extracted physically by colonial empires. The British Museum famously just has exhibits of, you know, very important historical artifacts from all over the world that would mean a whole lot to the places where they're from, that Britain is just has ruled out ever returning. They will not be handing those back.
And that's replicated here as well. There are so many things that have been taken from Indigenous peoples here that need to be returned, that are being kept in museums. And for purposes of science and academia, while that doesn't displace the idea that these things and the data, and they belong to the people.
It's good that they're giving back, but obviously they could be giving back everything, which would be good, or just, taking real steps to, I guess, pay some level of reparation for the enormous sins committed by, I mean, Belgium, especially in their colonial occupation of their African territories. The Belgium colonies were especially brutal. Leopold II was notably especially brutal. We don't have to get graphic, but really, really disgusting, punitive measures taken against the native population to try to subjugate them. And that has, it's not only a historical scar, that carries on to today. I mean, that's, yeah, Congo, the DRC is not in a good place today. And that's why the getting a hold of these maps isn't even really discussed in any of the articles I read. It's never discussed in the context of that the DRC is going to have a big green revolution or anything. It's all about export economy because, yeah, the DRC is still, you know, politically damaged from the colonial era. They have not been. I don't know. Yeah.
Well, I guess it's that idea, which I feel like we talked about in the previous episode about the Congo, is this idea of a post-colonial nation when there's such continuing long-term economic structural violence being wrought upon a nation due to the so-called process of decolonization from foreign influence that it's, yeah, to call it post-colonial is ignoring the continuing harm that goes on every day.
Definitely, yeah. And the DRC is also in a kind of constant conflict in their northern area, the northern region, with this, they're fighting the M23 militia backed by Rwanda, which we could do a whole episode on. Let's skip every other continent. We should just be talking about Africa every episode from now on.
Well, there was an interesting thing I saw in my searches when I was looking at, I guess, the relations specifically between the DRC and the US, given this whole cobalt metal company. And I saw that there is also an agreement that's been signed between the DRC and the US, which is a mineral deal. It's called the Strategic Partnership Agreement, which gives the US access to the Congo's critical minerals in exchange for investment, infrastructure, and greater US engagement. And the kind of parameters of this deal are concerning to read about. It says the US provides security and political support to help stabilize the DRC, which I believe is talking about Rwanda, in exchange for American firms receiving privileged access and right of first offer. And even this agreement was fought against in February of this year by Congolese lawyers and human rights defenders, as it was believed to be a constitutional challenge to the DRC's own laws. Mm. And there was an incredibly titled essay about it, called Shafted, The Scramble for Critical Minerals in the DRC. It was quite disparaging of the approach. And so I'm glad they chose to use that particular word.
Yeah. I mean, yeah, and that's really reminiscent of a lot of the deals that the US is trying to set up right now. It sounds a lot like the deal that they are working out with Ukraine for, for continued military support. Ukraine will basically just give all the resources in the soil to the US.
And Armenia and Azerbaijan as well.
Yeah. The US really just setting up a new colonial system around the world as the international order breaks down.
Which is wild because, like, whenever has US military involvement
helped? I guess it depends who you're talking about. If it helps the ruling class of these countries, I'm sure they benefit enormously. The people living in the countries, not so much, you know. Then that's the raw deal. That's the difference between this liberal internationalism, which really focuses on the opinions of the ruling class versus a better system, something that takes into account the people living in these countries and how they might, you know, feel about a certain deal or certain, having US military bases and,
Or I guess kind of just like the responsibility and accountability that another country has to what happens with increased mining. So the DRC in particular, there was a report that was put out by the Business and Human Rights Resource Center about human rights abuses due to transition mineral mines in Africa. And they found that human rights abuse cases had increased by 122%, up from 45 in 2024. And of the 329 allegations in 2025, 56 of those were from the DRC, which was the most from one country. But I haven't seen any discourse whatsoever about how, given these kind of strategic partnerships, the US would take any type of responsibility for ensuring there's mitigated harm, given they want to increase mining.
Yeah.
That seems to be a whole lot of silence.
Yeah. I mean, I'm sure they have some rule on the books that they're just ignoring. They have all kinds, they have the Leahy law about military aid, that they have to make sure that if they're giving military aid, that, you know, that it won't be used to break international law, commit war crimes, but they just ignore that. You know, I'm sure they have something on the books about, you know, making sure that they're not just investing in gross human rights abuses, but that is the bread and butter of U.S. capital, the U.S. Imperial backing of their, international capital class. From coups all across South America to this today.
Yeah. And I guess it's just, it's a really thorny part of the topic and debate around the green energy transition and like needing to combat climate change and needing to move to sustainable energy and technology. But then there is just all of this other shit attached to it that is not as, it's not sustainable or green.
Definitely.
And it's still part of the picture.
Yeah.
And I don't have the answers.
No. Yeah. I mean, it's, that's why, unless there's a systemic approach to the causes of these crises, even if we manage to solve the crises, there'll just be another one. So, I mean, I really do fundamentally believe that in my soul. Even if tomorrow some entrepreneur comes along and solves climate change with a startup company, that we would just...
You're not going to invest?
We would, well, even if we solve, we would just immediately, there would just be another crisis, because it's not like the system itself is producing these crises. We would just over-extract or overproduce in another way that would then just cause another existential threat. So yes, climate change must be tackled, but it must be tackled in a way that actually solves the underlying logic that creates, you know, a system that will just happily hurtle towards global ecological destruction without any, that hitting the brakes at all.
Maybe AI is the thing that will be our limiter if it knows that we can't control and limit ourselves.
Well, why don't we have a little community service announcement? We'll be right back.
Our first disagreement on earth.
Me and Zan are going to have a little chat.
You're listening to a 3CR podcast. 3CR is an independent community radio station based in Melbourne, Australia. We need your financial support to keep going. Go to www.3cr.org.au for more information and to donate online. Now stay tuned to hear the rest of your 3CR podcast.
So during that, we had a heated argument. Yep. We're no longer talking to each other.
Yep. This is going to be two shows now. Zan's going to say whatever Zan wants to say, and then I'm going to talk about whatever I want to say, and it's not necessarily going to cross over.
So...
No, just joking. This is
I love you.
This is an all-love show. This is this show.
Except for the hate corner at the end, which is two minutes dedicated purely to hating on things.
Yeah, we cannot forget that this week. Did you want to talk about AI?
No. I mean, okay. All I will say is that I feel like I've never felt closer to wanting to become a comedian, because I feel like that feels like a profession which AI can't take. Yeah. Because people want to sit with other people and laugh with other people. And AI jokes just don't hit the same.
They're not funny. I have seen AI, I've seen clips of AI, like, generated stand-up comedy moments, and they are painfully unfunny, but they're very funny to boomers. Definitely a certain type of boomer loves the fake AI stand-up comedy of kind of hecklers heckling moments.
So my tactic is I'm just going to keep working on my jokes.
That's good. Yeah, that's AI can't take away anything that's, well, I say that now, anything that's fundamentally human.
Hold on to your humor. Yeah.
I guess that, I don't know, there are a lot of articles about teenage boys dating AI robots. So maybe human connection can be automated away, which is not good. That is that is a black and white issue. That's a bad thing, I think.
Unless it like rapidly increased the emotional maturity.
It really sounds like it's not. It sounds like it's doing the exact opposite. They
darn
just cannot
it. All
talk.
Right, back to the jokes then.
I will just quickly say we have a couple of tickets left or a couple of tables left at our trivia night next week, July 22nd at Hard Out Bar. If you would like to come along, it's going to be a great night. It's going to be very funny. Zan's going to do 15 minutes at least pure stand-up comedy. So work on your routine. You've got 1 week.
Yeah, and you'll have to work on your laugh because I will not be able to survive if these jokes don't land.
It'll be July 22nd. That is next Wednesday at Hard Out Bar in Preston. And you can find the link on Instagram on the 3CR page or Googling Uprise Radio Trivia Night Hard Out, I think should come up with it.
We've got some juicy questions brewing.
We've got some great questions. It's going to be a great evening and we are raising money for 3CR. So come on down, get involved. We would love to see you there.
Do we have anything else we want to mention before we move to the hate corner?
I'll just mention these couple of stories staying in Africa that there have been some developments. The EU has put sanctions on gold coming out of Sudan in response to the civil war, which is something that has taken a long time, that has definitely been a driving force of the conflict, that the UAE has allegedly been supporting the RSF in order to extract gold from Sudan. And that's something that people have been talking about for quite a while. Mm. So it's taken the EU a while to move on this.
And where they will get their gold from now. Because the DRC also has artisanal gold mining.
Mm, yeah. There's gold. I mean, West Africa has a lot of gold. And that ties into the other half of this, which is a Burkina Faso update. We need a Burkina Faso sound. Oh, what about this? Okay. Burkina Faso mentioned. We have Burkina Faso has asserted 100% state control over a new $68 million gold mine.
That's huge.
Again, could be good. Mm. Really depends on if Ibrahim Traore is a hero or a villain.
Yeah, I feel like this is going to be one way to find out. Yeah. Is 100% state control, but 0% corruption?
Yeah, exactly. It'll be something to keep an eye on. This could be a great development in sovereignty and African development and anti-imperialism, but it could also just be exploited depending on efforts to root out corruption or just how much corruption is just institutionalized. Really depends on if Ibrahim Traore is the real deal or not. It's hard to tell from afar.
And every week we say we're going to find out.
Yeah, we have not come to a conclusion on that yet. That's all I had to mention. Oh, and that Africa's poorest countries are paying more in interest on their loans than they are getting in loans. Good on international finance for debt trapping Africa successfully. And
yet again.
It's really good that, Yep, that's
that the money keeps working the way it does.
Yep, that all these people who say very nice things in public at their big speeches then just contribute to a system that is fundamentally about making sure that Africa stays underdeveloped and remains,
extractive resource economy, I feel like we spoke about with the whole mining question about how so often these resources are not allowed to be developed into products in the country itself. It has to be exported as raw material. So they can't have that type of sovereignty, which Thomas Sankara was hugely against fighting.
Yeah. No, definitely. Yeah.
Remember his quote was like, don't give us the food, give us the tools.
Yeah. Yeah.
Better than that, so you all know.
Yeah. Send tractors, don't send food. That's the real deal. It's Yeah. What are you going to do? What are you going to do?
I'm actually racking my brain for something for the hate corner, but I think that, yeah, I've had a blessed 24 hours. Yeah, what about you?
Zan's in a great mood. Well, I'll just stick to the old classic. I'll just do two for two. I'm going to stay with, I am continuing to hate on the Labour candidate for Brunswick. If you are in Brunswick, and last time I said in Brunswick, but what I meant was if you're in the electorate of Brunswick. So if you are in Brunswick or West Brunswick, or I don't actually, I thought I could do the Brunswick electorate off the top of my head. I forget. But if you're in the surrounding suburbs of Brunswick, you're probably
there's no North Brunswick or South Brunswick, is there?
No, just Brunswick, West Brunswick.
Strange.
Something to look into.
Anyone else think that's really sus?
The mysteries of the world. But yeah, if you live in those areas, do not be fooled by the fake progressive face that has been put on Labour's state candidate in this election. His social media campaign is ramping up. It is it's designed to trick you into thinking that he is a cool progressive, you know, is going to be it's going to push the needle in Labour. No, Labour Party, it's time to, don't think that getting a good candidate into the Labour Party is going to help at all. It will not help. They will simply, he will be subjugated and made to vote for, you know, whatever ridiculous deals they come up with to, you know, I don't know.
Okay, no, I've thought of something for my hate corner. I got one of those messages today where someone says, do whatever you like, but, and then proceeds to present all of the limitations. Mm. And it's such an annoying message because I feel like you do one or the other. It's do whatever you like, full stop, or here are the limitations. Yeah. But do whatever you like, but. Mm. It's like, which one of those am I meant to do?
Yeah, yeah. If you're sending that message, you should know full well that everything after the butt is, that's what I want to do. That's the stuff.
Oh, it's what I will be doing.
Yeah. Yeah. Don't tell me to, that's, yeah. You're, it's a bad, yeah. It's a bad.
It's a bad. So the summary of our show today is, that. It's a bad.
Yeah. I don't know what the summary of this show is.
The summary of the show is we have really comfortable seats and.
Yeah. And the African Union needs to become a country. It should unify the entire continent under a single banner. And that would be the best thing moving forward. And that's why they killed Gaddafi, because he wanted to make an African currency. And on that note, we have a little song to go out on. Okay. We will see you all in a couple of weeks, and we'll see a select few of you next week, July 22nd. We will see you then.
Ciao.
Bye.